Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. And the smell of cut grass is one of the pleasures of summer, I think. And the feel of a cool lawn under your feet on a hot day can be really heavenly. But what's the real cost of one of those uniform weed-free lawns? How many chemicals are being added to not only our home environment, but possibly community water sources as well? Today, we're lucky to have a guest who can help us find the right balance for the kind of lawn we want and how we want to take care of it. Doug Soldat is an assistant professor of soil science at UW-Madison. He teaches, among other things, turf grass nutrients and water management. Doug, great to have you back with us on Garden Talk.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Judith.
So let's start out with a basic definition. What defines turf grass?
What is a turf grass? That's a great question. That's
well,
one of the
you.
First things we teach in our class on introduction to turf grass management. So a turf is a community of plants that form a contiguous surface under constant traffic or defoliation. Very scientific sounding, but basically it just means that when something is, it's either being grazed or mowed, it's, you're not going to have bare soil, so it forms a totally vegetated surface when you're continuously mowing it. So there's thousands and thousands of different grasses, but there's only a handful that we call turf grasses. So a turf grass is something that forms that contiguous surface when it's being mowed constantly.
And so I think you answered that a little in the second part, but what then defines a turf grass versus, say, a ground cover? Because there are a lot of ground covers that look pretty uniform and it covers things, but I'm thinking it has something to do with a ground cover might have one little stem and then lots of leaves, whereas a turf grass is kind of all together.
It's right in the definition, the grass part.
Okay.
So it's a turf that forms, or a grass that forms a turf. So like clover is a turf.
Oh, okay.
But it's not a grass, so it's not a turf grass.
Okay. And how can we tell, you just said, you know, how many different kinds of grasses there are. How can we tell what kind of grass or grasses we may have in our lawn already? Because, you know, usually when you move into a house or, you know, rent a house either or buy it, you know, that's not one of the things they necessarily tell you, like, you know, well, we put the roof on, you know, 15 years ago and, oh, by the way, that's Kentucky bluegrass. So, you know, it seems like to know how to take care of it, it helps to know what it is. How do you figure out what it is?
Such a good point. And that's something we rate when we talk to master gardeners about lawn care and turf care. We say, what kind of grass do you have at home? And they all say, I don't know.
Blank looks.
It's like, well, you know what type of garden plants you're maintaining. But no, grasses are one of the most difficult plants to identify just because of their kind of, they all look the same. And in the main way people can identify different species is by looking at the flower. Turf has a flower, but it's the seed stalk, but we rarely see that. So we tend to identify it by
looking at... Because you mow it down. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, you mow it down probably before it gets to that point.
Yeah, exactly. So we actually look at these almost microscopic features to tell them apart.
Wow.
It's pretty easy for somebody who's trained in it, but it's really difficult for the average person. So, but most of the grasses that we have in Wisconsin lawns are either... They're usually a mixture of a lot of different things. Kentucky bluegrass is really perfect for our climates. We see a lot of that surviving. Other grasses we'll talk about today, fine fescue, tall fescue, perennial ryegrass, and then some grassy weeds will also be in that mix usually.
And I remember growing up again in Chicago, we did have different kinds of grass in the lawn, and one of the kinds of grass was so, it could almost cut your feet. I mean, it was a really very fibrous kind of thick, flat blade. And I just remember, I mean, that was the really tough grass.
There's a lot of different types of grass like that. But then even within a species like Kentucky bluegrass, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of different cultivars and varieties that can behave really differently too.
So what are some of the factors to consider when deciding if a lawn's right for you and what kind you might want to grow?
Yeah, so that's at the University of Wisconsin. We do all kinds of research on that, from the absolute minimum maintenance species, and those are going to be different than the really high maintenance stuff. So it's a personal choice, and it's also a choice that you want to make based on the environmental circumstances.
And you talked about there being lots of mixes, and I know, like, for instance, Prairie Nursery has a no-mow or low-mo kind of mix and things like that. What are the advantages of having more than one type of grass in your lawn?
Yeah, so a lot of it for kind of a general application, when we don't know much about the site, we recommend a grass that has a mixture of Kentucky bluegrass and then fine fescues, which are, when you say that low-mo or mm-hmm. no-mo mix, those are usually entirely fine fescues,
okay.
different types. And then some perennial ryegrass. So the thought behind that is, well, you put them all down, and whichever is best for the particular environment will thrive in that area. But if we know more about the site, sometimes we don't want to, you know, we can make a more customized recommendation.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about lawns, and especially how to have sustainable, reduced risk, and even organic lawns with Doug Soldat, Assistant Professor of Soil Science at UW-Madison. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. It's Garden Talk, and you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mealer Show, and Mealer is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. And so, Doug, what about the needs for nutrients and, for instance, the use of herbicides? How much of an impact does that have on the larger ecosystem and on the water table? It seems to me like there's a perception that lawns really need a lot of inputs.
Yeah, so that's definitely a perception that probably started when it was really, really true back in the 40s and the 50s when lawns evolved with the invention of the subdivision, and we had these new chemicals, we had these new cheap fertilizers, we had these gas-powered mowers. We could mow the grass down a really short height, and it would just be really out of this world and beautiful. And those lawns took a lot of nutrients, and they were managed improperly.
It was a different time.
It was a different time for sure, and that's still it persists today. We can find lawns that are overmanaged, fertilized too heavily, more chemicals used than required. But we're really with the years of research and on environmental impacts of turf, our management recommendations are really fine-tuned, where we feel we're not compromising, we're making environmental compromises to get the lawns that people want.
And do you feel like people are moving in that direction of being more aware of the larger impacts? And also, I mean, I think a lot of people worry about children and pets and wildlife. You know, if you're putting so much chemical matter into, you know, just keeping a lawn looking good, you know, is that a balance?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think we're seeing more of that. People, lawns are really, really useful. I think at one time, maybe everything was a lawn and we feel there's too much grass. But if you try to, you know, walk around your life, it's hard to imagine a lawn-free world. So I think there's a balance between too much grass and then not enough. But in right now, what we're seeing even at the golf courses, they're scaling back the managed areas because mowing is expensive. There's a lot of fuel involved. And if the area is not needed, why are you spending your weekend maintaining it? So I think finding that balance, how much lawn do you need, how much lawn do you want, is something that's continually being reassessed now.
And I have to say, when I drive by a golf course, I mean, I can notice how pretty it is, but I also think, wow, a lot goes into that perfectly manicured appearance.
Yeah, it is a lot of work, but there's a lot of skill, there's a lot of training behind that. And I think that there's a perception that golf courses are overmanaged or polluting. And in fact, being so close to it, I would say some of our absolutely lowest impact areas can be the golf courses.
Oh, great.
Because usually the people managing it have a four-year degree or a master's degree, and they stay up on all the research on what's most efficient and things like that. So they can, there's some really shining examples of environmentally friendly golf courses.
Oh, that's great to hear. And I'm assuming parks management, probably similar trends.
So parks are tough because most parks don't really have much of a budget outside of mowing. And so we talked about the environmental impacts of nutrients. And so that gets a little counterintuitive, because if you have an area of turf has some need for nitrogen to remain dense, and that density can slow the movement of water across the surface and improve infiltration. And so that there's a cost to having that density. And so if you're not fertilizing for, you know, 5, 10, 15 mm-hmm. years, you can get pretty bare area mm-hmm. that tends to get pretty hard and compacted, which can lead to more runoff. So,
and quite possibly really heavy use too,
heavy
depending
use
on the park.
Yeah, which is not real safe for a lot of sporting events.
Yeah.
So one thing that my predecessor Wayne Cousseau was one of the first to really document is that a a moderately fertilized lawn can actually have lower nutrient losses than a lawn that's not fertilized at all.
Interesting.
So there is kind of a balance there, give and take. Yeah.
Well, I definitely want to get into the possibilities for organic and reduced risk lawns, but we do have several people who would like to join the conversation. So let's take a little trip over to the phones here and go to John in Fitchburg. Hi, John.
Good morning. I would like to ask your guest about lawns that will spread, so to speak, without... I know you mentioned you usually cut off the seed heads, but will they spread by themselves if you have a bare area, if you let it go for a while?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the answer is it depends on the type of grass. So that's one of the really big benefits of Kentucky bluegrass. It forms what we call rhizomes. It's an underground stem that goes underneath the soil and emerges and forms a new plant. Kentucky bluegrass is a really good spreader. Something like the fine fescue, the Lomo-Nomo mix, they spread to a much less extent. Some of the grasses in those mix will not spread at all, and then creeping red fescue will spread a little bit, but not as vigorously as Kentucky bluegrass. And then perennial ryegrass will not spread at all.
Is it also a question, Doug, how long you're willing to wait?
Yeah. If the area is big enough, you're going to be waiting a long time before that's filled in. And sometimes the reason there's no grass there is because grass can't thrive in that bare area. But if it's just a little patch, usually it will fill in pretty quickly with Kentucky bluegrass.
Have you been waiting for it to spread, John, or are you just wondering for the future?
Yes, there's a couple areas that were heavily doused by a pet, and I tried to soak it down, and it doesn't seem to want to fill in. So I thought maybe that was because I wasn't letting it by cutting off the seed heads of the surrounding grass, but apparently not. So say your name once more, because I just love to hear that.
What, my name?
Yeah.
Judith Sears Poisson.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, John. You are now officially my favorite caller of the day.
Oh, that's funny.
Thanks, John.
So if I could talk a little bit to John's issue there with the dog spots. Yeah, that can be sometimes usually what kills the grass there is just way too much salt. And what we kind of recommend is actually taking a wheelbarrow and filling it up with some topsoil or some compost, and then throwing in some seed and then patching those areas, because those dog spots usually don't recover very quickly.
Well, and dogs are creatures of habit. So like he said, it's probably a very specific area that got a lot of use, shall we say.
Right.
Well, thanks for that, John. And I'm glad you enjoy my name, because I do too. Mary in Madison is next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question. I've got a backyard that is just full of pine trees, basically. I think now that I've cut a bunch of them down, I'm down to like 38 pine trees. And the pine trees, you got the needles and stuff like that, which is, I've raked them up, put them in the burn pit, got rid of them, and a whole bit, pine cones all over the place. It sounds like you're walking on carcasses. Anyway, the thing of it is that as far as growing grass, I know I need shade grass, but stuff just doesn't seem to really take off too well as far as growing.
Okay, so you need some shade grass, and it's a place where there's been a lot of pine. Doug, what do you think is a good option?
So there's still, what percentage of the lawn gets sunlight during the day, or how many hours of light does the area get, do you think?
It doesn't get a lot.
Okay, that's always going to be a challenge. I mean, pine trees create a really dense shade. Definitely your best bet is to go with a fine fescue. Nothing else in the mix. And then, usually with those areas, what we find, the soil's really hard and kind of compacted under there. So when you're putting in that grass, you want to make sure you're loosening it to a pretty, 3-4 inches. And then, so the thing that it's always going to be tough to grow grass there is those pine trees are competing for water and nutrients, and then they're getting all the sunlight with the grass. So it's going to be a challenge. I wish I had an easy answer for you, but the best bet to get it established is to loosen up the soil really good and then keep it irrigated during the first 6 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try anything at this point.
All right. All right, so fine fescues are your plan A there.
Yeah, shaded pine, or
yeah, is it? It's a dry shade, I'm assuming. Or does it get real wet?
We get quite a bit of rain. These were pole pines that were planted like 30 years ago. They should be dying off. Some of them have. The only problem is getting rid of them. I'd like to get rid of at least 16 to 17 of those trees out of the backyard. The only problem is finding somebody who will actually do it.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like fine fescue is a good first try. And then if that doesn't work, maybe some other kind of ground cover, Doug, other than grass?
Probably, yep.
Great. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, talking with Doug Soldat about lawns. Much more ahead, so stay tuned. We're back with Doug Soldat. He's Assistant Professor of Soil Science at UW-Madison. He teaches, among other things, turf grass nutrient and water management. And we're happy to have him here, and he's happy to take your questions when you call 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to Rose in Fond du Lac next. Hi, Rose. Hello, Rose.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, I've had a lawn. I live on a farm, and I've had a lawn here forever, and we've got some really nice grasses, but we also have a lot of weeds in it, mainly dandelions. And when they bloom, and then they get fuzzy, but we still continue to mow the lawn. And then after all of that's done, they blend right in with the lawn. Is there a problem with that, or should I be trying to get rid of these things? Because I don't want to use pesticides or anything. Herbicides. I don't want to use anything like that.
So basically, you're wondering if the dandelions or other green weeds are actually hurting the lawn or if they're just there.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
And also, I have a question about, you said he manages water, too?
Right.
Okay. I don't water it either. It's very hardy, and when we have dry summers, it's still green.
Okay. So what do you think? Are roses, dandelions, and other weeds actually hurting the turf grass? Or?
No, it's they're probably not hurting anything. And so that's the thing about a weed. It's a part of a perception. There's some weeds like poison ivy that are very clearly weeds and need to be controlled. Dandelions don't really fit into that category. And maybe if your neighbor has a different perception, says, I don't want any dandelions in my lawn, and they look at your 10,000 dandelions blowing the seed over, that might be creating some social issues in your neighborhood. But no, they're really not hurting anything ecologically. And the fact they have a nice big fat tap root that probably helps mm-hmm. loosen your soil. Mm. But a lot of people just don't like the aesthetic that gives. So a good alternative way to get rid of dandelions without using traditional conventional pesticides is to try that new product. I think it's called Ortho EcoSense, and it's basically just iron. And so in Canada in Ontario, they have a ban on cosmetic pesticides, but they are allowed to use this product. They call it something else up there, but it basically contains iron, and dandelions happen to be more sensitive to iron than grasses. So you spray the iron on, and it basically kills the dandelion by iron toxicity, and the turf survives, and it tends to be pretty effective on dandelions specifically.
Hmm. And would that be considered a reduced risk treatment, or?
Yeah, very reduced risk.
Oh, okay.
Because it's literally just iron, just the mineral that's in your water if you're up north.
All right, so good luck with that, Rose. It sounds like you can have your dandelions coexisting happily with your grass. Rich in Summers also has a dandelion question, so let's go to Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hi, I just have to manage a 5-acre vineyard, and I have to mow between the rows, and I'm afraid in a few years that I'm going to have a sea of dandelions, and I need to kind of control the hot spots. Maybe you just answered my question.
Yeah, that's a real key to weed management is taking out the seed producting areas before they take over everything.
So what's the name of this?
So for you, if you're commercial,
yes,
Fiesta would be the name of the same product that I just described, the homeowner version called Ortho EcoSense. So Fiesta would definitely be a good thing to try.
Fiesta?
Fiesta, FIESTA.
By whom?
Oh, I forget the name of the corporation.
Just Google it?
Google it or send me an email if you can't find it.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, Doug, why don't you give your email?
Sure. It's DJ Soldat, and that's SOLDAT, at wisc.edu.
Okay.
Great. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rich. And Steve in Colfax has a question. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I just had a huge project of putting in a septic system. So I've got about maybe a quarter to a half an acre of just cleared space, just down to dirt now. And I want to know how to establish this. It's partly in pines and partly in sun.
Okay. So what kind of soil do you have?
It's a very clay soil.
Okay, and does it stay wet? I'm assuming it's got to be draining pretty well to have a septic system out there.
Yeah, I guess it drains well. I'm not exactly sure about that.
Okay,
yeah.
So we have in the Learning Store, University of Wisconsin Learning Store, there's a publication that really goes through all the 10 steps that we talk about for establishment. But it sounds like the main thing, if you have this clear area, that's really good. It's probably graded off, the rocks are removed. You want to make sure that upper few inches is pretty loose, and then you're going to pick your seed. In this case, I'm going to go with I'd recommend a fine fescue, because you do have some shade and the drainage is going to be decent, I imagine. So put down your fine fescue at whatever the seeding rate is on the bag, and it's usually going to be a few pounds per 1,000 square feet. And then you want to get there's a couple different types of mulches you can get. Straw mulch is probably going to be the most economical, or you can buy a kind of a paper waste product that helps to retain moisture and then prevent when it rains, to prevent that from crusting over the surface. Usually a starter fertilizer is a really good thing to give it a kickstart. You want to put that down at the same time you have the seed, and then rake it up with a leaf rake. And then, if you have like a little utility vehicle, that seed to soil contact is super, super critical. So the more contact you can get between the seed and the soil, the better your success is going to be. And then you just want to keep the surface wet. So one thing we see with people that are irrigating during establishment is they tend to overdo it. So all you really need is just keep that upper half inch wet. Don't worry about the lower half, and it should start coming up pretty good.
Okay. Okay. And time frame for all this? I mean, is it?
Yeah, you're a little late right now. I mean, the best if you have bare soil, you need to get a cover on it. Ideally, you'd want to be doing this a couple weeks ago, because now you're going to have some summer weeds that are going to really start to compete with you. But give it a shot, and if it fails, September is a really good time to seed.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for joining in. And Sarah posted a picture on our Facebook page. She's wondering if Doug has any ideas for how to conquer this thistle that is determined to take over our lawn and gardens. She's tried digging them up, but the taproot often extends multiple feet underground or even under their front cement stoop. What's a good way to get rid of those spiny thistle
like
types?
Canada thistle, they're really tough. They're very, very difficult weed to control, like you said. And they're so prolific.
Uh-oh, Sarah's not going to be thinking it sounds very encouraging. Is there anything, I mean, if you can't get rid of them, is there a way to control them?
Yeah, I wonder, you know, the standard chemical control method by spot spraying, I would definitely give that a try. If that's not working, try the alternative, the EcoSense. Maybe the iron toxicity will help too. But yeah, it's really, I think thistle is one that needs to be controlled. Obviously, it makes a lawn almost unusable with those spiny.
And they grow so fast.
Yeah, really tough weed. Really tough weed.
So sorry about that, Sarah, but maybe is it the kind of weed that is there a, or kind of plant really, is there a time when it's especially like needs a lot of sun and if you cut it down to just the taproot, even if you can't get the taproot out, I mean, are there certain times where it's expending a lot of energy and if you can kind of, you know, interrupt its cycle, it helps?
Yep, that's absolutely true. So the best time to control a weed is going to be right around the time of our first hard frost in the fall.
Okay.
Aside from that, usually the spring, usually when the flowers are coming up, the plant's using a lot of resources, so it might be a little weak at that point. So fall is your best option. But sometimes with these tough ones, it's kind of being persistent and just trying to take it out every 3 or 4 weeks.
All right. Good luck with that, Sarah. And Gail emailed, "My lawn is very bumpy, but I don't know why. I just know it's not because of voles or moles. I've noticed in the spring that I pull many large rocks out of my tilled garden plot. Is the same kind of thing happening in the lawn, but the grass keeps the rocks from breaking through?"
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And with this this question comes in all the time: bumpy lawns. And it's it's basically the heave and of the frost and the freeze thaw cycles that their lawn's going through. There's not a whole lot you can do about it, unfortunately. One thing, if you can get your hands on a roller, it's one of these big drums that you can fill up with water. We don't really like to recommend compacting lawn and smoothing right. that out, because it is good to have that heaving action actually loosens up the soil, introduces oxygen into the root zone. But if it's really bothering you, you have to get rid of it, I would try to get your hands on one of these rollers and then roll it down, and that's gonna at least get it a little better.
Okay. Well, good luck with that, Gail. And on the bumpy lawn theme, we have Teresa in Green Bay. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. I am pretty positive that the bumpy lawn that I've got is due to worms, and the reason is because our far backyard was leveled, tilled, whatever, so that it initially was smooth and regrassed. And then as the weeks progressed, the further I walked back, I could literally feel the bumps going further and further back as the weeks progressed, until the whole entire lawn was bumpy again.
Hmm.
And it's horrible bumpy. I mean, You got holes where my foot will sit in it.
Oh, really?
That doesn't sound like worms, though.
Yeah, that sounds...
That sounds more like burrowing animals, maybe.
Well, there's no evidence of burrowing. I've got a very old yard. But the only... Like I said, the only reason I believe it's worms is because I could feel it progressing further and further back as the weeks progressed after it was leveled.
So you're actually breaking through the top of the soil with your foot?
No, I'm not. But the ground has just kind of left a hole that's big enough for a foot to fit in. And sometimes there's grass there, and sometimes, there's not.
So the lawn was graded, and then so it could be just some natural settling happening.
Well, the part that I'm talking about that's really bad is the closest area to the house where it wasn't leveled. And it's, like I said, it's a very old yard, and it hasn't been leveled. And in the far back where it was leveled, it's not that bad.
Okay. So some things, if it's a bumpiness on this massive scale, how large is the area?
Half an acre.
That's pretty big. The one thing you could do is what we call top dressing, and that's either bringing in like a compost or maybe even a topsoil and just raking that in. And a lot of times that will kind of minimize this large scale, and kind of eventually, if you do it every year in the fall, just put this compost down and rake it smooth, you'll start to have fewer of those undulations.
So you're not convinced it's worms then?
Well, I just don't think worms can do well. It could be. I mean, you'll be amazed at the things I've been wrong at in my life. But
it sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work for the worms to do. And there's actually no legal option to control worms. They're just viewed as a beneficial. There's no product that you could apply to get rid of those.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Teresa. And if you solve the mystery, definitely give us a follow-up, because we're both kind of curious about it. Doug, I want to take a little time to talk about a couple new publications out from UW Extension. There's Organic and Reduced Risk Lawn Care, and also Do-It-Yourself Alternative Lawn Care. And first of all, let's talk about the difference between organic and reduced risk.
Sure. So the whole problem with the kind of the green movement and organic and alternative, all these keywords, is there's not a whole lot of definitions. So what we wanted to do is to set some of these definitions that we're talking about. So when we talk about organic lawn care in that publication, we're following the USDA standards for food production, which is a very rigorous standard. I think it's much too difficult of a standard to follow for lawn care. We're not eating our lawns. There's a lot of reasons I'm not going to get into. I would like to see the lawn care industry come out with a set of standards that everybody can follow to be on the same page. But right now that doesn't exist. So it's kind of like the Wild West, where you have everybody defining organic in a different way. So when we talk about it in this publication, we're talking about here are the methods you can do that would get you a USDA organic certified lawn. And it's pretty difficult to do. Reduced risk is another thing that we're kind of laying out some chemicals that are that fall under this category designated by the EPA as reduced risk. So these are conventional pesticides in many cases, but their use rates and their toxicity is much, much lower than the conventionally registered pesticides.
So the Environmental Protection Agency is setting certain standards for
Yeah, they call it their reduced risk pesticide. It's a category of pesticides. Okay. So we talk about lawn care using only those pesticides, which can, our research shows you can have a very, very healthy looking lawn using those chemicals. And then the alternative lawn care is, so that publication, Organic and Reduced Risk Lawn Care, is intended for the professional market, the landscapers, the lawn care providers, sod growers, golf courses. The do-it-yourself alternative is more for the homeowners, and it's kind of a mishmash of those two with a less of a focus on actual definitions and standards mm-hmm. and more of a focus on here are some alternatives to the conventional way you can manage your lawn.
And those are available through the UW Extension Learning Store. And if you have not visited the Learning Store online, you'll be amazed at the range of great, really useful publications they have. We have a link directly to the page that has both of those publications. That link is on our Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. It's a comment to the status announcing today's program. And also really great, and I was mentioning to Doug how good this was to see, it's available in English and Spanish. So reaching an even wider audience. So we talked about organic and reduced risk, and regardless of either of those, you say that soil preparation is really key. What is good soil preparation for turf grass?
So it's just like good soil preparation for your garden. The best thing I can say, so right now in the way most turf grass soils are prepared, let's just imagine a house. Dig the basement out, and they have a whole bunch of soil. A lot of that will get spread around the property. And that soil deep down usually has a lot higher clay content. So now we have a high clay content with low organic matter, and it gets compacted during the house building process. And then the original topsoil that was on that lot was scraped off. There's probably 6 or 8 inches of it, put in a big pile. And then when we're ready to establish the lawn, they only take about 2 inches of that 6 or 8 inches back. And then you're forced with growing your grass in about 2 inches of topsoil on top of a compacted clay. And that's really not a workable strategy. So you imagine, and that's exactly what happened at my house. But you imagine if you want to do a garden in one of these bad soils, what do? You usually build a raised bed, mm-hmm. something with high organic matter, 8 inches of good. So that's really what you need for a lawn too. And the sad fact is most of our lawns just do not even come close to meeting that. But if you have that, doing something organically or reduced risk is very, very easy because soil, a good root zone is going to provide nutrients, lots of water. But if you don't have a soil, you really don't have anything that can mm-hmm. help address.
And then you talked about, you know, that's when you're thinking of establishing a lawn, and then later you can do top dressing kind of, you know, work things in.
Exactly. So if assuming you have that bad soil described, what can you do to improve it? You can aerify, that would poke those little holes in the ground and pull out the cores, but that's really only affecting the top 2 inches, which really isn't your problem anyway. What you need to do is kind of build up a much healthier base. And mm-hmm. I suggest applying compost in the spring and the fall at about an inch and raking it in, and do that for several years. And eventually you'll have this nice, a deeper, healthier root zone.
Well, and it's interesting because I only kind of made the connection now, Doug. It really is like a perennial garden bed where you're not starting with a fresh canvas every spring. You have established plants there, and how do you make sure that, because they're obviously using the nutrients from the soil, you have to make sure that there's more there for them to draw on.
Exactly. In organic agriculture, the farmer has the benefit of tilling up every year and loosening mm-hmm. that soil and creating this really nice environment to grow their plants in. But with turf, we just don't have that. And soil's and we don't see it, so we never think about it. But soil is key for healthy grass.
All right. Well, I definitely want to talk about more of the aspects of that reduced risk lawn care, but let's go back to the phones right now and go to Tim in Delafield. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Great. We have a question. We recently established some new lawn about 2 weeks ago, and it's coming in really well. We used straw mulch, and my question is, do I need to remove that at some point, or just leave it be and mow right over the top of it?
Yeah, you can leave it be. Usually the number one thing I see, the problem I see with straw mulch is people put too much of it down. And so to see whether or not you're in that case. You only, when you look down at the straw mulch, you want to only see about half of the ground area covered by that straw. If it's more than half, I would say rake it off. But if it's only covering about half of the lawn, you can leave it and it'll decay naturally.
Okay, thanks a lot. Yeah, I think we probably have, it was put down too thick, and so maybe we'll rake it off. But would you recommend doing that now or waiting?
How tall is the grass?
It's probably only about 2 inches.
Yeah, that should be good. I mean, the only hazard you have is when you're raking, are you pulling up grass plants?
Right.
And so just pay real close attention when you start doing it. And if you're not pulling up the grass, you're fine. But if you start yanking them out, that's gonna hurt you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Tim. And let's go to Jude in Long Lake next. Hi, Jude.
Hi. Good morning. I have a no-mow lawn on a hillside, and it's very low impact. I don't do much of fertilizing or anything with it. I'm just trying not to have a footprint there other than keeping the grass intact. The problem is I'm getting some creeping Charlie, which goes over the top and kills everything underneath, and I'm wondering what the if there's an answer for that.
Is it in full sun?
It is.
Okay, so congratulations. You're one of the few people that might be successful in getting rid of the creeping Charlie. Usually with creeping Charlie, it really thrives in shaded environments where the grass can't thrive. But in full sun, it's actually pretty easy to control. Unfortunately, the control methods that we're going to recommend are kind of the conventional. You go to the three-way weed killers, like Weed Be Gone or whatever. You usually have two or three herbicides in them. That in full sun usually works pretty good. I've heard that this EcoSense, the iron containing product, will work, but you have to make the applications about every 2 weeks on Creeping Charlie. So if you want to give that a shot, you can try it. But usually Creeping Charlie can be controlled using pesticides when it's in full sun. If it's in the shade, it usually just wins no matter.
Okay,
what.
And you said Weed Be Gone. That's the name, the brand.
One of them. Yep. You go to the store and there'll be a whole host of grass herbicides. And they usually contain three different ingredients.
All right. Thanks for that call, Jude, and good luck with your creeping Charlie. Let's go to Gary in Shorewood next. Hey, Gary.
Hi. I have a lot of violets in my lawn, and I went online and I found a product it was Ortho Tough Brush Killer because it contained the, I'm going to pronounce it, Triclopyr, and I'm wondering, then I read the package and it said don't use it on a lawn. Is this a good way to get rid of violets in my lawn?
So triclopyr is pretty good for violets. So violets fall in that same category as Creeping Charlie. It's a shade weed, and the reason it's there is because the grass can't outcompete it. And you're in Shorewood, you probably have a lot of shade. The triclopyr will work, but my concern is there's something else in that product. If they say don't apply it to the lawn, definitely don't apply it to the lawn. But I think triclopyr, you're on the right track. So that's a conventional herbicide that's pretty good at Creeping Charlie and violets. So try to find a product that has that triclopyr, but that says to apply it for lawns.
Okay. I will keep looking then.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Good luck with
that. Thanks for the help. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And, Doug, a couple of the things that you talk about also in good lawn care that allows more low-risk use of chemicals and things like that is appropriate mowing and irrigation. What are some of the mowing guidelines?
Yeah, so mowing, what I like to tell people, if you're only going to do one thing to your lawn, you know, everybody's like, I don't like to work on my lawn at all. What should I do? Sharp mower blade every year, twice a year if you can. What I do is I have two mower blades. So I change it out in the spring, and that gives me the whole summer to get the other one sharpened. Because a lot of times it's like, oh, I should sharpen it, but well, you know, I just need to mow the lawn.
Right.
So buy two; they're like, you know, like $10 or something like that. But having a sharp blade is super important because you're creating a wound every time you're mowing, and that's a stress on the plant. So you can imagine getting cut by a sharp knife or a dull knife, and you don't want either, but you'd rather.
I can imagine that a little more easily than I'd like to admit.
Yeah, you'd rather get cut by something sharp. Helps your skin heal together. Turf is the exact same way.
And you know, it was interesting reading in the publication when you say, you know, it's creating a wound. I mean, obviously that makes sense, but I had never thought of it that way. And when we talk about things like, you know, woody ornamentals or trees or shrubs, I mean, we really take good care to make sure that those wounds are you know, made at the right time and taken care of. And yeah, the entire lawn is going through that process.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's like grass is just in this own category, and it's like it's not talked about like garden plants, but it is a plant. It's exactly the same, but a lot of times we say, oh, the soil doesn't have to be prepared like that, or we don't have to treat the wounds. It's like, for some reason, we just treat lawns as a second class plant.
You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, talking with Doug Soldat. He's an assistant professor of soil science at UW-Madison and an expert in sustainable lawns. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question, comment, or photo on our Facebook page. We are talking about how to have a healthy and beautiful lawn without a lot of extra chemicals added to the mix. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller and talking with Doug Soldat. He's assistant professor of soil science at UW-Madison and a turf grass expert. And let's go to Bob in Wauwatosa next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you all today?
Good. What's going on with your lawn?
Well, we have an extremely lumpy, I would call it lumpy, not just bumpy, 50s yard that is much shadier than it was even when it started. We have lots of mature oaks around here, lots of shade, and I think we need to, with the bumpiness, I don't see any alternative to just rototilling the front and the backyards under and starting over.
What do you think, Doug?
Yeah, you know, that's one thing I would really like to see more of is people starting over, honestly, because our grass that we have, the main thing, the two keys to having a really nice lawn is the soil and the right grass. And you can't really change either one of those unless you totally redo it. So I'm biased. I'm going to say, let's redo it. In that case, bring in some topsoil and you can get it perfectly smooth, and then you can kind of customize your grass. If that's going to be too much work. I mean, this is bumpy lawn day today. There's not a lot you can do. Like I said, I get a lot of questions about it. It's kind of a natural process that happens up here over the winter. Adding the compost at about an inch, half inch, and then I think a lightweight rolling with one of these rollers filled with a little bit of water to kind of smooth it out is probably your option too. But I think if you're willing to renovate it, I think you'd be really happy with the results with that.
Can I have a quick follow-up
sure.
question? The yard is very shady, and I see in Mr. Tukey's organic lawn care manual that bluegrass is not shade tolerant, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's what I'm saying. You can get rid of the grass and customize your grass for a nice big shady spot.
Well, the thing is that fescues apparently like mostly silty and loamy soil, and we have a lot of clay, so possibly your previous remarks about maybe tilling in organic matter could help the fescues to get a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. The organic matter is going to help any grass. The thing that you can't do a fine fescue is if it's wet a lot. You know, like when you walk around, the water squishes.
Oh, we have good drainage.
If you have good drainage, fine fescue is going to be great.
Okay.
And if Bob is wanting to do that, you know, kind of start from scratch, is this a good time to do it? Or with the time that would take to till it up and do the addition of the organic matter, what's he looking at for a timeline?
Yeah, you want to have the seed in the ground sometime between August 15th and September 15th. So ideally right around Labor Day is the best time to get the seed in the ground. So plan out everything else that needs to be done around that date. So
yeah, better start tilling early August or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe put up with mud for a while.
Yeah. Keep it out of the streets.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob. And Doug, that brought up a question. So talking about, you know, amending soil and trying to reduce the clay content, how deep down do you need to go for the soil that a turf grass is going to be accessing?
Right. So just think about it just like you would a tomato plant. How much soil would you like to have? What kind of good root zone would you like? And it's probably like, I don't know, 18 inches. So as much as possible. Mm. I think, you know, 6 inches is pretty good.
Okay. Because I think I certainly tend to think of grass as, you know, being more along the surface than what's going on underground. But obviously there is a lot going on.
Yeah. If you have, I mean, some like a tall fescue, that will send roots down 2 feet. If you have a good soil. So really, the deeper those roots you can allow them to grow, the grasses will grow. Even Kentucky bluegrass likes to have its roots down to 6 or 12 inches. So the more loose, nice, healthy soil that you can get, the better.
Well, and you talked about irrigation, too. And I'm guessing that, you know, if there is good, loose, well-aerated soil going down deeper, that also helps with keeping the balance of water, too.
Oh, for sure. The first lawns to brown out are the ones with the smallest amount of topsoil. In the summer.
Well, let's go to Ron in Madison next. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
What's your question? Sure.
In addition to creeping Charlie and violets, I've got what I think are wild strawberries in my lawn, and it's a pretty sunny area, but how do I get rid of them?
Jeez, you know, that's one I haven't heard before.
And if it was me, I'd be trying to get them to spread instead of trying to get rid of them.
They taste pretty bitter.
Oh, okay.
Huh. So what does a plant look like? It looks like a strawberry plant?
Looks like a strawberry plant.
But it persists when you mow it.
Yes.
Huh. Okay. I really do not know. That's one I haven't had before with wild strawberries. I would imagine. So have you tried controlling the creeping Charlie, the violets, and the strawberries before?
Yeah, I've tried. You know, I've used Weed Be Gone, and they just seem to suck it up and get green.
Yeah. That's, you know, I really don't have a good answer for you. I would try, and you'd try spot spraying them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe go to Google on this one. I'm sorry.
Well, and I guess I would make sure, you know, maybe take a sample of it to someone at either a garden center or
get it
somewhere just to make sure that you know what you're dealing with. And then maybe you can look for products that specifically address that.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you. Well,
good luck with that. Sorry the strawberries are bitter. That would have been a nice treat otherwise. Heather posted a picture on our Facebook page and says, help, this patch seems to be growing and there's pretty significant browning, it looks like. But I'm guessing it's hard to know what's going on there, Doug.
Yeah, that's tough to know. It's definitely like a drought symptom for sure. My guess is that might be some grub damage. Mm. The one way you can check is just go into that dead patch and pull up with your hands, and it should pull up just like carpet, and the roots should be all severed off, and you just have that layer of dead grass. If that's not the case, you might just be looking at some sort of different type of soil where it dries down. It's been really dry in Wisconsin, so we've seen a lot of drought symptoms earlier than normal, but that grubs kind of look like a suspect there.
All right. Check for grubs. And let's talk a little bit about fertilization, Doug. What products are okay to use, especially on the reduced risk lawn? Because I think, you know, organic is great, but like you said, organic standards are for things we're eating. Obviously, you know, we want a healthy environment, but maybe reduced risk is the way to go.
So fertilizers are interesting. So the key, we talked about mowing, that's the grass, get the soil right, choose the right grass, mow it 3 inches or higher with a sharp blade. And then the next most important thing is keep the density up by fertilizing. And for kind of the organic alternative approach, we think two applications, one around now, right around Memorial Day, and another at Labor Day are the best options. And you can do that using, if you're going the organic route, an OMRI certified fertilizer, which is a USDA organic approved option. And there's a lot of really good local OMRI certified fertilizers for turf in Wisconsin. Chickadee Doo-Doo is one. Chick Magic is another. We have Purple Cow. There's a lot of these from our agricultural industry that you can use. Go ahead.
No, I think Chickadee Doo-Doo is a Wisconsin product.
All three of those
are all three.
Chick Magic is, and so is Purple Cow. So, and for reduced risk, you know, the key with fertilization is you want to use a slow-release fertilizer, and of course the organic ones are naturally slow-release. But we do have a lot of good inorganic slow-release fertilizers that basically do the same thing that the organic ones are doing, although they're synthesized. Make sure you have at least 30% slow-release fertilizer if you're going to go with a synthetic.
Great. So what about... what are the limitations in controlling pests? You just mentioned slugs as a possible problem for the photo. What are some of the options for controlling pests if you're trying to limit chemical use?
Yeah, they're definitely limited. Corn gluten meal is a product that's been around for quite a while now, and it's been used with mixed success. Some people say it works really, really well for them. Other people have tried it and not liked it. But it's a byproduct of the corn processing industry, and it prevents seeds from germinating. So when it's for crabgrass seeds for establishing or dandelion, you want to put it down in the early spring when the forsythia are blooming, and that's when it's going to be most effective. A lot of the other organic pesticides tend to contain vinegar, acetic acid, or citric acid, or plant oils. And the problem with these is they kill everything they touch. So you end up with these spots that are not completely unlike a dog urine spot where everything mm-hmm. is dead in the circle. So the one exception to that is that new product that just contains iron that multiple companies are going to be coming out with. And that will selectively kill the weeds and leave the grass alone.
We're talking with Doug Soldat, Assistant Professor of Soil Science at UW-Madison, teaching, among other things, turfgrass nutrient and water management, and an expert on sustainable lawns. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, lawns can be the frame around a house or a colorful garden, but to keep them looking good and thriving, they take a fair amount of attention. Doug Soldat is with us today to offer advice on how to decide what kind of lawn we want and what kinds of turf are best for our growing conditions. And he can help us limit the amount of chemicals that we use as well. Doug's an assistant professor of soil science at UW-Madison. He teaches, among other things, turfgrass nutrient and water management. Thanks again for spending time with us today, Doug.
Thanks, Judith.
All right. Well, we had a question on the Facebook page from Michael. He says, I fertilize with Milorganite near Memorial Day, Labor Day, and Halloween. Is this the right schedule?
Yeah, that's pretty close. So as we were just talking with Judith over the break about this one, the old recommendations used to be the holiday schedule. So Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, and Halloween. And that's back when people were bagging clippings. And now that's bagging clippings is kind of the exception, not the rule. And again, if you're out there, we definitely encourage you to return those clippings to the lawn because it acts as about one fertilization a year. So then what happened is we dropped out the 4th of July. So we were at Memorial Day, Labor Day, and Halloween. But some of our newer research has been showing that if you fertilize around Halloween, the efficiency of that fertilization isn't quite as good. And efficiency means it doesn't necessarily get into the plant at the rate we'd like to see it. So with an organic fertilizer like you're using, I think that's okay because it pretty much stays in that particle until the next spring. But if you're using something more soluble, like a Scott's Turf Builder or something like that, we'd want you to target that the 4th of July rather than the Halloween. But long story short, I think your program is pretty good.
Great. And we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line but wanted to stress the importance of maintaining the proper pH balance in the soil in your yard. What would you say about that, Doug?
Yeah, you know, pH is really important for a lot of other plants. Grasses just don't happen to be one of them.
Oh.
I like to see pH above 5.5. And below 5.5, we tend to see poor quality grass. But if you're anywhere from 5.5 all the way up to 8.5, turf grasses tend to do pretty well.
That's a pretty wide range. I think a lot of plants are more like 1 point, 1.5 point range where they really thrive.
Yep. The turf grasses, for whatever reason, tend to be pretty insensitive to pH.
Great. Well, let's go to Muriel in Lake Geneva next. Hi, Muriel.
Hello. I just have a question. We cut down a rather small, medium-sized maple tree last June. There was, when they ground the stump, of course, they left a lot of the fresh green sawdust, which they dug into the soil, but there was quite a bit of it in there. We added some soil on top, seeded it, and it seemed to do fine for a short time, and then it gradually just petered out. So in September, I reseeded it again, and I added a lot of Milorganite. The grass came in thick and darkest green I've ever seen in my life, and it has until about 2 weeks ago. Now it seems to be thinning out and fading and not looking as healthy as it did before. Is it because it leaches the nitrogen from the soil, as someone had told me?
Yeah, that's one concern about incorporating wood chips or sawdust or something like that, is that it's mostly carbon. And you always need to balance the carbon and nitrogen in your soil. So if you're adding a lot of carbon, it's going to take that nitrogen away from the plant. That could be it. It depends on how, the scale of the wood chips and the sawdust that was actually incorporated. The other question I would say is, what type of grass are you seeding?
It was a blended grass.
Just a...
With the bluegrass,
yeah, rye, fine fescue. Okay.
Right.
And then how's the moisture been? You think this might be related to how dry it's
fine.
Been?
We had the most beautiful grass there until about 2 weeks ago. It was so thick you could hardly walk through it. And now it's just starting to look yellowy and spatchy again. Can I put on more Milorganite? Will that do it, or do we need a more balanced fertilizer?
I don't think if that change is usually doesn't happen that quick. If it goes from really thick, if it's a fertilizer issue, it takes a long time for that to really thin out. Try irrigating it a little bit. I don't know. Maybe it could be a grub issue like we had. We just talked about, maybe pull up and see if you can find any white C-shaped grubs that are chewing on the roots.
But it's only where the tree was cut down in a small area. The rest of it is fine. It's just where that sawdust
was. Just right. Okay, well then maybe you're right. I guess what needs to be done is you need to add some even more topsoil and some compost and mix that in to kind of dilute the damage that sawdust incorporation caused.
Thanks for that call, Muriel, and good luck with that. Let's go to John in Appleton. Hi, John.
Yes, hi. I have a backyard that is maybe 3 hours of sun a day. And when I bought the house 20 years ago, the neighbor's trees weren't as large as they are now. And what I'm seeing is my grass is getting very thin, and I'm getting a lot of moss moving into my yard in general. And I was just wondering what I need to do to take care of that, because that seems to be some nasty stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going
to
take a guess that Doug's going to tell you to get out that rototiller and start over.
Well, you know, 3 hours is not very much. My father did the same thing. He had a really shady backyard, and he wanted to put grass there. He put it, and I said, it's going to go away eventually, and it's going away now, and I get to gloat over that. But no, so anytime you see moss, this is a really key environmental indicator for us. Moss survives in low light and usually wet or damp. And that's just the absolute opposite environment that grasses were designed to live in. So growing grass is going to, for you, is either going to be a constant struggle, reseeding, adding compost. It's just, you just don't have enough light. And then the moisture issue can be a problem too. So the outlook is not real positive for having grass in that type of environment. I mean, you can prune trees, you can clear out underbrush, all those things are going to help. But until you're up around 5-6 hours of light, I wouldn't expect you to be real successful.
How big an area is that, John?
It's probably about 50 by 30 or so. And what's interesting is the one side of the lawn is nice and lush and green, and the other side is very thin, and it's the grass is kind of more yellowy.
Yeah,
and that's where all the part that is lush gets more morning sun. I have trees on each side, so I, like noon is when I get my most, you know, direct over is when I get my most light. So
okay.
But I think it's just ironic. One side it looks absolutely terrible. The other side is nice and green. So.
Yeah, that's strange. I mean, it could be like where the roots...
A walnut tree to boot.
That's,
the grass is growing wonderfully, yeah.
Under the walnut tree?
Yeah.
Oh, that is funny.
Go figure, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. There is a special type of grass called Poa supina. Or supina bluegrass. It's really hard to find. It's like $30 a pound. But you're telling me about a small area. That's your best bet for growing lush grass in the shade in a wet area. So supina is S-U-P-I-N-A. it kind of has a lime green color to it, and it gets a little puffy. And if it actually gets in full sun, it can get it can brown out and die. But it does pretty well in wet, shady areas where moss would survive. So you might want to try to
Pina, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can give that a shot. Small, it's going to be real expensive, but with a small area, I think it's feasible for you.
And I used to think that Creeping Charlie was my problem.
Little did you know. Well, thanks for that call, John. And Chris Molina, our on-air producer, let us know that a few callers have wanted to bring up emissions from lawnmowers as another kind of way that lawns can impact the environment. So I think, you know, a good way to take care of your lawn and also get some exercise is a push mower.
Yeah, push mower. We've done studies on push mowers and compared them for, like, the amount of force they take mm-hmm. to go through, and there's some real differences out there. Some of the newer push mowers are actually really, really nice. So I definitely think that's an option, is to look for those type of mowers.
Well, and especially when you're powering it yourself, probably really want to make sure those are nice sharp blades, so you're cutting down on how much resistance there is too.
Yeah, it makes you think about how much lawn you actually want to have.
There you go. Makes you think that moss might not be such a bad idea. Well, let's go to Bill in Big Chute. Hi, Bill. Oops, sorry. Hi, Barry. Sorry about that. Hi, Barry.
Yeah, hey, I want a question about aerating and thatching. How often should a person do it? And then what type of aerating is better, the core plug or the spike?
Yeah, definitely the core plug is better. Spike is probably easier to do, but pulling that core out creates a hole, which introduces some oxygen and allows water to infiltrate. And then that hole slowly kind of collapse, but it'll leave behind a loose area for roots to proliferate in. And then also the soil you bring up will break down on the surface naturally and kind of create a little top dressing of soil, which is pretty good. The best time to do that is in the fall after the weeds have germinated. So if you do it in the spring, you're exposing a lot of soil and allowing weeds to grow. So the best time to aerate or aerify your lawn is definitely in the fall around September.
Okay.
Thatching is something, if you have thatch, it usually means that too much nitrogen is going down in the lawn.
And what does thatching mean?
So thatch, first of all, thatch is like the collection of dead and decaying stems. Mm. It's not necessarily a leaf. Some people think I have to bag because if I return my clippings, that'll add to thatch, but that's not the case. It's actually the stem of the grass plants. And they have more lignin, so they break down a lot slower. But if you have like 1 or 2 inches of thatch, that means you're probably fertilizing too much. But, you know, we have to control it. And so thatching is a really invasive thing that you only want to do if you have an inch or two of thatch. I think more people are thatching just because they think they need to, and they're creating more damage to their lawn than they need. So make sure go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, what? Go ahead, Barry.
How do you tell if you have a lot of thatch?
Well, just you know, dig down, and if you have a couple inches of these kind of woody looking stiff stems that are sitting right on top of the soil, you know, you should have like a half inch of that stuff. But if it's like 1 inch or more, then you need to think about dethatching.
All right. Thanks for that call, Barry. And you can join in as well by calling 1-800-642-1234. We're talking about sustainable lawns with Doug Soldat from the UW-Madison. And Karen in Eau Claire is on the line as well. Let's go back to the phones. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a question we have a lawn that's a Kentucky bluegrass, but it's getting big patches of clumps of tall fescue. And is there a way to get rid of that?
Yeah, so first of all, congratulations for identifying those two species. That's a really rare thing. And this is a problem I've been hearing about more and more over the last couple of years, partly because we're seeing more tall fescue planted. Tall fescue, when it produces seed, that seed is really vigorous and hardy, and it just blows in and it establishes. And you're right. Tall fescue, it's great if you have it for everything, but if it's just individual plants, it looks really, really bad. So that's a common problem that I think more people are going to deal with. There is only, as far as I know, there's only one chemical that will take tall fescue out of Kentucky bluegrass without killing the Kentucky bluegrass, and it's called Certainty. and it's not available for homeowners. You have to go to a professional applicator. It also, they should be familiar with it. They should have it because it also will take out quack grass, which is a huge problem. So CertainTeed is a chemical which will take out that tall fescue.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right, and thanks for that call, Karen. And I think Stuart in DeForest has a quack grass question, so let's go there. Hi, Stuart.
Hi there. Yeah, I think when I was out with the screener, you were talking about that. Last few years, I've gotten more quack grass in my yard, and there was someone on Larry's show, yeah, maybe 2 years ago from UW, and he said there was a product called CertainTeed out there, and he said it was more commercial. Is there any update to that on whether it can be used residentially?
No, I mean, it can be used residentially, but it has to be applied by a professional still. So that's still the only option for quack grass.
And where does that fit? I mean, is that reduced risk or is that...
Yeah, it's not a reduced risk chemical, but it's in the same class as some of the other reduced risks. So it's a relatively new chemical, and anything that's being registered by the EPA now is really closely scrutinized. So that's I think that's a good option for tall fescue and quack grass.
Okay, I'll ask one more question quick.
Sure.
About thatch. I always mulch my yard, and I left it long so it wouldn't dry out and keep the weeds down. But I found that I ended up with a lot more thatch in the spring, and I'd get spots in my yard that got froze out because there is, you know, snow would sit there and kind of compact it all down. So last year what I did, I just mowed my lawn shorter and shorter as the season went on. Didn't have that problem this year. Is that another option?
Yeah, so what you're talking about is right, but it's kind of the wrong terminology. So the problem you're seeing is basically just dead leaves and vegetation. That stuff dies over the winter and then creates the kind of the straw color in the spring. So that that's common. If you mow shorter, you tend not to get that. But it's actually not contributing to thatch, which is more like a stemmy, woody stuff that can really cause problems. Your problem is, you're exactly right. Mowing low will get rid of that accumulation of the dead leaves. But it's really not causing a ton of problems. You have to wait another week or two before your lawn goes in full force. But yeah, mowing short will take care of that.
All right. Thanks for that call, Stuart. And Mike in Caledonia is next. Hi, Mike.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a question on dollar spot. It seems like every, probably in the next couple of weeks, I'll start seeing it come into my area of my lawn where it gets a lot of sunlight, and there's very little, it's very little topsoil. I've got, you know, a lot of clay underneath, and I've tried some, store-bought and, dry fungus preventer or whatever, and it just seems like I don't ever seem to get rid of it, and it seems to be worse a little bit every summer. Any suggestions?
Yeah, so that's a really strange one. Diseases are really, really uncommon in lawns, and especially in that situation, full sun diseases are pretty uncommon. I would recommend contacting your county extension agent and having them send in a sample to our turf diagnostic lab, and we can try to diagnose it for you. I'm not exactly sure. It's really hard to be a kind of an armchair agronomist, but sending in a sample will really help us give you the best recommendation for that.
Diagnosing it, right? Because I'll see in the morning when you've got to do like the little cobwebby, things, and then it's just small circles, like 4 or 5 inch, 6 inch circles roughly. But I always end up having to reseed it in the fall when it dies out.
Huh. Yeah. Well, if you can get a sample, we can help you identify it. Our pathologist would love to get his hands on that. Because, like I said, lawn diseases are pretty rare. So, Turf Diagnostic Lab will take a look and then give you the best recommendation.
So, yeah, Mike, check out your extension office in your county. That's what they're there for giving good advice on things like that. Shannon in Adams is next. Hi, Shannon.
Good afternoon. I've got an acre and a half really sandy soil. I've got some grass growing there, more weed than grass. I was wondering what I can do to help be able to get more of a grass for my lawn versus all the weed.
Yeah, sandy soils are tough, and you're up there in Adams where it's all sand. The best thing is to plant a fine fescue, which is going to be more drought tolerant, more suited for those sandy conditions. But even so, I mean, I've seen lawns up there that have that type of grass, and they just can't compete because it is too dry. So depending on your specific soil, you might have just a lot of problems growing grass. But fine fescue, I would say a hard fescue or a chewings fescue is something you want to look for.
And do you get a lot of sun there, Shannon?
Oh, yeah. I'd say 80% of the day is all sun.
You know, so maybe a tall fescue would be a good option, too. So tall fescue has probably the deepest roots of all grasses, so that might be a good choice for full sun.
All right, good luck with that, Shannon. And Don in Hancock is next. Hi, Don.
Hi. So the reason I'm calling is I've had some trees removed a couple of years ago, and then the guy that did that, he put some black soil down and grass seed and straw, and the lawn came up. And then I used lime, and I'm really calling to find out how much lime should you use to probably an acre of grass, three-quarters of an acre?
It all depends on your pH. So like I was talking about earlier, usually we don't see, in our research, if the pH is above 5.5 or 6, we don't see any response to the lime. It tends to be, if you're below 5 or below 5.5 down to 5, 4.5, then it's a really good idea. And then the amount you apply is totally dependent on your soil type. So best thing, send in a soil sample for $7 and they tell you what your pH is and how much lime to add to get it to a target pH. But I can't really make that call without knowing more about your soil.
Yeah, I've got one of those soil testing kits. You know, the little capsule you put in it with the dirt and the water.
Yeah, what's your pH, do you know?
I haven't done it on this, but I was planning on doing it, you know, like 4 or 5 places around the lawn. And but if I put the lime on, should I put that on before or after the grass seed?
Definitely before. It's the best, and then you want to incorporate it down. When you put it on top, you're limited by the amount you can put on, because if you kill the grass if you put too much on, and then you can't till it into the deeper root zone. So if you definitely want to apply that lime before you seed.
And Doug, why don't you repeat what that range for pH is that turf grass likes?
Yeah, turf, in our experience, the grasses in Wisconsin do perfectly fine at pHs between 5.5 and 8.5.
All right, so a pretty good range there. Thanks for that call, Don. And in just a couple minutes we have left, Doug, what are some signs of problems with the lawn? What can be detected and maybe treated before too much damage is done? I mean, you talked about things like pulling up, you know, if you've got a patch that's suddenly brown, pulling it up and seeing if there are grubs. What are some other things to keep an eye open for?
Yeah, probably the best thing is if you have a soil probe, most people don't have a soil probe, just try to stick it down. You know, take a screwdriver and see how far, you know, see what that soil feels like. And a lot of, probably, you know, more than 60, 70% of the problems we have in lawns are, the root cause of it is the soil is really poor. So if that's your case, you can't get that screwdriver down more than an inch or two, consider putting down something like a compost, or maybe even consider renovating. If you have a small enough lawn where it's really economically feasible, renovate it, bring in some new soil, and choose the right grass.
And again, you said that there's been more and more of a trend towards people using blends of grass. How do you know, you know, other than, oh, I have shady, or oh, I have sunny, or, you know, how do you decide what blend might be good?
So, you know, this is a great thing about Wisconsin's Extension Service, is you can write down my email and I will dig into your site and I'll give you the recommendation. So use the resources that the university and the Extension Services has to provide. I'm happy to tell you where to get things and where to look for things. So it's just literally a phone call away, and we're happy to do it.
Well, and again, there are two great publications available through the UW Extension Learning Store, and there is a link up on our Facebook page, both to an article about the work that Doug's been doing, but also directly to be able to order those publications. And that's there's one that's geared towards homeowners and one that's geared toward lawn professionals, and so you can get that. Doug Soldat, Assistant Professor of Soil Science at UW-Madison, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thanks, Judith.
And I hope you will all tune in on Monday. We will have Peter Green of Infostar.com here. He'll give us advice on how to keep our computers running well and how to know when or when not to hit the panic button. And he'll share his top 10 list of useful websites for the month also. Stay tuned for Chapter a Day and other great programming here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.